Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FirstGroup plc Q3 interim management statement for 2012 and 2013. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until we conduct a question and answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your telephone. Just to remind you all, this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to hand over to the chairperson, Mr. Chris Church. Please go ahead, sir, and we'll be standing by.
Thanks, Anton. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to give some overall comments to start off with, then a little color on each of the divisions before opening it up to questions in the usual way. Overall, very pleased with the performance for the third quarter, despite the continued weak economic conditions. Underlying performance was bang on track and in line with our expectations. When we last did this with the half-year results, we were just coming out of Hurricane Sandy, and we talked about that at the time. What we've now done is quantified the impact of that, and the major impact was within student, and the impact this year on the profit will be roughly $15 million. Now, some of that could come back if school districts extend school days. They would normally do that at the end of the summer term, maybe at the end of Easter term. With the timing of Easter this year, if it does come back, it will be in the next financial year. On the balance sheet, very pleased with the continued support from our fixed income investors that allowed us to issue $325 million of 10-year bonds, which was three times oversubscribed. That was extremely pleasing. Turning now to each of the divisions. Student key feature was the impact of Sandy. As you all know, it was a major event. I'm told it's the second-largest insurance claim behind Katrina in the U.S. It impacted just north of about 20% of our depots, and therefore was a significant impact. If I can give you some guidance on overall margin impact, the $15 million equates to 0.6-0.7 percentage points on the margin. Outside of that, everything is going to plan, and we would expect to get to the margin guidance we've given previously. As you know, we were targeting the 10-11 margin, and outside of Sandy, we would expect to be there or thereabouts on that margin. The overall business improvement plan within the business is going well, as well as the increased investment that we're putting into that business, which over the medium term will put it into a far stronger position to achieve growth going forwards. In Transit, it's continued its steady performance, both in growth terms and maintaining the good margins that we've seen before, particularly in the core business. The area we've highlighted in the statement today is, as you know, we've been proactively cleaning up some very old legal claims. We had a couple in the first half. Most of the rest now are relatively minor, but there's one in particular, a meal and break claim, that is coming up for settlement discussions during February, which could be potentially a little larger. Now, I have to be a little cautious on this because we are going into settlement discussions, and you'll understand the reason for it. If I try and scope it a little, our expectations is that this will be broadly in the single-digit millions of pounds if we do have to settle. I should also mention Sandy, both in Transit and in Greyhound. It impacted those businesses by 1 million-2 million pounds, but in both of those businesses, we will offset those costs with additional actions. On Greyhound, despite the sluggish economic conditions, 1.6% growth continued from the first half into the third quarter. Our flexible operating model has continued to work extremely well. If anything, that business has the potential to outperform. The Express model continues to grow well, and we've launched some new services, as you can see from the statement. Again, the individual growth depends upon what's happening in specific regions, but as I say, overall strong performance. We've also launched a new product, the Yo service, which is targeted at Chinatown services. So, for example, we launched in December a service from Chinatown in Philadelphia to New York and back again. And that is going extremely well. In UK bus, the top line has slowed a little bit in line with overall economic conditions in the UK. But we expected that, and we built that into our forecast. So there's no change in guidance for UK bus. And again, we are targeting the 8% margin. On the disposal program, that continues on track. We announced the sale of Chester and Birkenhead in November, and this morning another small disposal in Redditch and Kidderminster. The target of £100 million remains unchanged, although, as I've said previously, I'm more interested in doing the right deal than the exact timing of that, although we do see a way to achieving that before the end of the year, and that remains the target, but as I say, prepared to go longer if it's for the sake of doing the right deal. I do put out one note of caution, though. We do note the OFT seeking comments on Stagecoach's acquisition of our business, the Wigan business, and a Bluebird business. No impact yet on the process, but clearly that could have a timing impact. On rail, very good performance in the rail business. The strong growth at north of 8% has continued, and that is underpinned by strong passenger growth numbers. And also very pleasing with ScotRail being extended now out to March 15. We've been associated with the Scottish Railroads now since 2004. I'm very pleased with that continuation of the relationship. And that will help us to support the Scottish Government in the key event in 2014 of the Ryder Cup and the Commonwealth Games. We note the Brown report, which overall we take as being very positive, particularly the urge to recommence the franchising process as quickly as possible. Clearly, we need to wait for what the DfT say, but hopefully we will hear things in the near future. So overall, very pleased with the action programs that we're putting in place in each of the businesses that will put us on a stronger footing, particularly when taken together with the increased investment we're putting into the businesses, will put us in a stronger position for longer-term growth in the future. And on that note, I will now open it up to questions. So if you could take over. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question at this time, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypads and the hash or pound key to cancel. So once again, that's star followed by 1 to register a question and the hash or pound key to cancel. There'll be a short silence while participants register for questions. Our first question comes from Mark Banduka. Please go ahead, sir.
Hey, morning. Thank you for taking the question. Just a couple of easy ones. In terms of first students and first transit, just going back to what you guys said in the H1s, first transit at US dollar revenues, excluding the extra week, reduced by 3%. Can you give me some sort of quantitative confidence around what happened in Q3 and what you expect to happen in Q4 so that we can sort of see some sort of projections for first student till the end of the year? Similar in first transit, you're growing obviously on an X. With the extra week included, or rather excluded, US dollar revenues increased by 4% in H1. How's that run rate looking in both Q3 and Q4 specifically? And then a more thematic question, but based on what's happening on the balance sheet and clearly you taking steps in the right direction, what are your thinking around other assets that potentially be sold, such as Greyhound Canada, First Transit, and you know the potential to garner interest in both those assets?
Okay, thanks very much, Mark. On student, we guided overall to around 2.5% like-for-like growth in the full year. That's what I think we said at the half.
Mm-hmm, yep.
A little bit lower than a lower number than your 3%. And again, we would see that looking at what happened in the third quarter. We would see that around minus 2.6%. So overall where I am when I talk about being broadly in line, if you take the margin that we were targeting in student of 8.1%, or clearly we wanted to beat that, so a little bit above that. The impact of Sandy would be 6.7%. If we then look at outside of that, what we need to achieve to get there, then that's well within the range of what we can do. I have slight caution because, as you know, each quarter has very different numbers as to whether schools are in or schools are out. It is a big quarter for us, the final quarter, but looking at what we did last year and the improvements we've made in the business in terms of the savings we've made, then that's well within our sights on student. Clearly impacted by run rates, by the impact of Sandy, though, in that third quarter. On transit, yes, what we said at the first half was 4% growth. If you take out the services business, which we've talked about as non-core, then we were closer to 6% growth. Mm-hmm. In the third quarter, we were actually a tad above that. So again, that gives us confidence that we will get to certainly the overall 4% growth that we've guided on previously. Then on the balance sheet, yes, I've seen the rumors on our various asset disposals. And I think if I read all the rumors, then I think we're actually disposing of all of the business. But let me be absolutely clear. Other than the disposal programs that we've announced in bus, there is no sale process ongoing. And again, most of those questions are linked with our overall questions on capital structure. So it either comes on, are we going to sell businesses, are we going to do rights issues, etc. So if I may, let me just address that overall. Our capital structure for us is, our ideal capital structure, we are very clear as a board, is that it is investment grade status. We keep our capital structure under review all the time, just like most companies. Clearly, we have the additional factor of rail franchising, which we need to look into that, and that will become very much clearer over the coming weeks and months. And based upon that information, if we need to do something, then we will make the decision at that stage. And what we've said previously, and I make no change to this, is that we don't rule anything in, we don't rule anything out. And that's, I'm sure, what you would expect any finance director to say. Having said all of that, where we are at the moment is that we have significant liquidity in this business, north of £1 billion at the moment. We have plenty of covenant headroom. And again, I think somebody asked me in this session at the half year how I view capital structure. And the answer I gave is you need to have the right capital structure to be able to invest in the business. And that's what we've been doing. We've been investing at an increasing rate. And we've continued that in the third quarter. And whilst we're able to do that, and I see that we're able to do that for some time, the capital structure is right at the moment. Once rail becomes clearer, we will then decide whether we have the right capital structure going forward. But just to finally just reiterate what I said in directly answering your question, there are no sale processes at the moment other than what we previously announced. And therefore, I want to scotch those rumours.
And just picking up on that last point, Chris, in terms of what you were saying around rail specifically, if one takes a scenario, for example, under what scenario is a rights issue then for likely? Is it if you lose one contract, if you keep both contracts, what scenario analysis has one done in terms of your thinking? And I know it's obviously very unclear with what the government's doing at the moment.
Yeah, we've had lots of thoughts on all the different scenarios, and there are a myriad of different scenarios. And at this stage, it's difficult to say which ones are likely to play out, and therefore I'm not going to be pulled on that one, Mark.
Fine, very clear. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks, sir. Our next question comes from Alex Brigg. Please go ahead, sir.
Morning, Chris. Thanks for answering. Alex Brigg from UBS. Could you just quickly just have one question just regards to student? Give us some commentary on discretionary spend. There's sort of conflicting commentary between you and some of the other guys in that market, and it seems that the beginning of the year was quite tough, but then it's been improving. So any more commentary would be very valuable. Thanks so much.
Yeah, we're the key thing that we've looked at is our overall retention rates, which were bang in line with what we expected at 90%. In terms of discretionary, like most people we've seen, there's no major change in the move on concessionary contracts moving out to us. But what we are seeing is some increase in what we call organic growth. So we mentioned previously, it was only a small number, so we didn't want to get overly excited about this, but 250 buses came in with districts, basically discretionary spend, if you want to use that phrase, coming into us. So it's small. The key feature of that is a reversal of what we've seen previously. What we have seen in that market is it's just fairly steady after obviously what's happened over the last 2-3 years, and I wouldn't get more or less excited than that comment. It's nothing major happening in that market, just steady progression.
Okay, bro, thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Damian Brewer. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking the question. I've got three, so apologies for the number, but I want to deal with them. First on UK bus, we seem to have seen some fare cuts and quite chunky fare cuts in places like Manchester, but overall you still seem to have different regions putting up fares. Could you tell us sort of what gives the individual bus companies, now it's more devolved, confidence that those fares are going to stick rather than seeing the price-led pushback we saw last year? And I guess as sort of linked to that, how confident you are in the budgeting process coming out of that division vis-a-vis what happened last year. And if I can give you the other two contracts at the same time, just for information, can you tell us if we see rail contract extensions on Great Western and Thames Link, which, you know, barring a miracle, seems highly likely given the squeezed timetable, how much capital that would retain within the business that would have otherwise flowed out? And then very finally on Greyhound, the revenue there looks weak. Can you explain why that is and how much of the 1.6% was volume rather than price-led? Because obviously that has different implications for the amount of profit drop down. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thanks, Damien. Let me just so UK bus, if we go back to what happened in the past, prices were increased across the board and cost cuts were made as well, so reducing overall services and so on, and that has clearly damaged the business in the past. The approach that has been taken more recently is to devolve the power to the individual businesses, the individual depots, where they know what's happening in their local region, and therefore they make individual decisions on what to do on prices, and in some cases they're increasing prices, and in others, and the one you referred to in Manchester, which has been very successful, they've cut prices on the basis that that will lead to increased volumes. So there isn't an overall trend that is implied in your question as to what would happen. What we have said to the businesses is that we want them to make those changes because clearly that's the right thing to do. We need to have pricing strategies that fit with the local region. And I think it's fair to say that in some cases those will work, in some cases those won't work, and those will need to be changed. And that's certainly the model that's used by some of our competitors. And used successfully. But what we're seeing at the moment is that the changes that we are making are actually proving to be relatively successful, so in terms of increased volumes on the back of price decreases. And therefore, we will continue that. But it is very much, I emphasize, early days on that turnaround. In terms of the budgeting process, yes, I have confidence with the budgeting process now that that reflects the changes that we are making. I think if you go back to the overall headlines of that division, the top line is softer because of economic conditions, but we built that into our forecast, which is why there is no change in the overall guidance for bus. On rail, then, yes, well, first thing is I don't know. We do not know what's going to happen on extensions to franchises. And we are waiting, like everybody else, to see what the DfT announcements will be over the coming weeks.
I happen to agree with your logic that with the short time frame to the end of some of these contracts, it's unlikely that they would terminate without some extensions, but I honestly do not know. To answer your very specific question on if they did all roll off, which, as I say, I think is very unlikely, the net-net of the pause contracts would be around $200 million of cash that would flow out. But clearly, as we go forward, we would plan to win those franchises and aim for that cash not to go out and then make some profit on the contracts going forwards.
And just to be clear, if those contracts extend rather than end, that's $200 million that you avoid flowing out of the business as well.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aaron.
And on Greyhound?
On Greyhound, we haven't given out volume numbers before. Volumes, certainly within the express business, are performing very well. We guided at the half 6%, and that's a mixture of the point-to-point and the overlaps with the legacy business, and that's really important. And that differentiates us from our competitors is that we have that national network, and that feeds into the express volume markets. And overall, that's positive, and again, probably slightly north of the 6% that we guided last time. The key, though, in the Greyhound business is our ability to manage that business and manage the costs, and as we've called it, agile and flexible, and therefore the profit performance has performed very well. And as I said, I think of all of our businesses, that's the one that has the most potential to outperform.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you. Once again, just to remind participants that star 1 to register a question and the hash or pound key to cancel. Our next question comes from Edward Stansford. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Two questions, if I may. One, just a point of clarification on the $200 million cash that you talked about theoretically leaving the business in certain circumstances with rail. Is that all to do with working capital, or are there other bits and bobs tied up in that? And secondly, hopefully a simple question, could you give us an idea of the cumulative total bus sales so far announced, but perhaps not yet completed, that you've done so far, please?
Sorry, Edward, I didn't catch your first question.
Just a little bit of clarity on the $200 million of cash that may or may not go out in certain circumstances in rail. Is that all a sort of working capital, or are there other bits and bobs that are associated with that?
Yeah, it's mainly the working capital that flows out, and then you've got the advance payments on the season tickets and so on. On UK bus, we've done about $20 million so far.
Thank you.
Excludes the Northumberland Park that was done right at the end of last year.
So it excludes or includes?
Excludes.
Thank you.
So our $100 million excludes that as well. So we are comparing apples with apples.
Great.
So we have 80 to go, in other words. Just in case for anybody.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Peter Hyde. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. Two questions, if I may. Firstly, just in terms of First Student, I don't know if you've actually got the number of buses in total. I know you've talked about 250 organic growth, but would you see the number of buses being run by yourselves actually increasing next year, year on year, or when will that happen? And I don't know if you've got the precise numbers, so I'm kind of interested in how many buses you're running. And secondly, just on the DfT and rail, just being slightly away from it, can you just say what you think is going to be announced when by the government over the next month or two? Thanks.
Okay. On number of buses, overall our target for retention in 12-13 was 90%. We've not yet said what our target is for the upcoming season, and we're just going through that process at the moment. But the overall, we're talking about 50,000 buses that we run, and we are clearly the biggest operator in the market. What has happened recently is because we've been in the process of turning around the business, the gap in our model has been that we've not been out acquiring small bolt-on businesses. And there's effectively two ways of acquiring buses. The first one is going out and acquiring them with small bolt-ons. The second one is winning contracts. It's a similar way of CapEx. Now, as we go forwards, and certainly as we make the changes in the business with the efficiencies that we've made and the ability to invest at a greater rate and the plan to invest at a greater rate, we will pursue both of those opportunities going forwards. And because our model will be stronger going forwards, our belief is that we will be in a far better position to push that forwards. And therefore, over time, I would expect the bus fleet to grow. Now, at what level, we're not prepared yet to say, and I think it is a medium-term aspiration. But that's the whole purpose behind strengthening the business model.
Can I just pick that up then, in terms of, I'm not talking about big numbers, but do you think the business is ready to bid for some of those contracts, or has it been bidding, is it bidding now for contracts which start in summer 2013 or September 2013?
A small number of bids are now open. The main season comes over the coming months, so.
But sorry, I suppose what I'm really saying is, do you think the first student business is in a place to bid for those this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, right. We've made, as we've always talked about, there was a $100 million target for efficiency savings within this business, and we are well on track to achieving that. And actually, we will go beyond that because there's still plenty of opportunities. What that does is it puts us in a better position to bid for those contracts. And again, it comes from our size. We can bring quite significant synergies to the process. So, for example, we can buy our buses a third cheaper than many of our. So that puts us in a strong position to go after these bids, to put in, obviously, reasonable bids in terms of cost to the districts, but also that makes us a good margin.
Yeah.
And that's the whole purpose behind the transition program. And that is happening. Have we got to the end of that yet? No. And that's why this is a process that's continuing. And we often talk about we've done a lot, but there's still an awful lot more to do within students. But at the moment, we are bang on track. Does that answer your question,
Peter? Yeah, no, thanks.
Okay, good. And on your rail question, over the next couple of weeks, we would expect the DfT to announce what's happening on the paused contracts, and then later in the spring, what's happening on the remainder, and that will include what they're going to do, what they're going to accept and implement on the Richard Brown report.
Can I ask something, Chris, on that? The first Great Western ends in March, and if there hasn't been a renegotiation before then, does it automatically go into a period of extension?
Hi, Alexia. It's no. What you're absolutely right. The contract ends on the 31st of March. The DfT has the right to extend that for seven periods. Under the contract, they needed to inform us by the 31st of December whether they were going to do that. In the interests of our continued good relationships with the DfT and with everything going on, we agreed to extend that. So we gave them a little bit more time to decide what they wanted to do. And then they will come back to us and then say what exactly they want to do, together with if they want us to extend it further, they will tell us at that time.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Joe Thomas. Please go ahead.
Morning. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, coming back to the target of cash neutrality this year, does that we know that includes obviously the 100 million of asset disposals. Can you just clarify, does today's announcement on the exceptional costs relating to Sandy and the transit exceptional make any difference to that as well? I would have thought it naturally would. Secondly, you said you're comfortable with the budgeting process for the UK bus and US school bus business now. Could you just confirm that the upward trajectory that was previously anticipated in UK bus remains very much in place? And I think there was a 20 to 25 million profit improvement expected in financial year 2014 over financial year 2013. And then finally, could you just give us any updated thoughts on CapEx?
Do you want to be a bit more specific on CapEx?
Yes. In particular, what you expect your CapEx profile to be in light of the recovery that's required and the investment that's presumably required in your UK bus operations.
Okay. Right. Cash neutrality. Yes, clearly Sandy will have an impact on cash because that flows through, as will Transit, the legal claim there, if we do end up settling. That one, timing, if we did end up settling, I just don't know because we haven't gone into those discussions yet on what the timing of any cash flow would be. But within the context of this is a £7 billion turnover group with £700 million of EBITDA, when we talk about cash neutrality, that is within, not quite obviously within the roundings, but we would aim to cover that with our push on cash as we normally manage it. And I think last time when we talked on this similar call at the half year, I was asked what I meant by cash neutrality. I said plus or minus £20 million. So I see both of those events as within that overall guidance. In terms of the budget process, in terms of 13-14 numbers, I'm not specifically guiding on 13-14. Clearly in bus, the numbers for next year will be impacted by where we get to in the exact timing on the disposal process as to what their exact numbers are. And all I will say on 13-14 as general guidance, if you've allowed me to have this opportunity, is first of all, I think a number of analysts haven't yet reflected IAS 19. And as with the finance director of Go Ahead, I would encourage you to reflect the IAS 19 numbers as quickly as possible. In terms of the action programs that we're putting in place across the division, I see no change in what has been previously guided on. But I, again, like many finance directors, not only in the transport sector, I remain cautious on the overall economy. We're now in the longest and deepest recession since the Great Depression. So I would remain cautious on that, and I'm sure that all analysts will be thinking about that going forwards. In terms of overall CapEx, let me talk first of all at a group level. I think we've been very clear in the past that if you go back 2-3 years, the amount of CapEx was reduced. If you then look at what happened last year, the year ending March 12, the CapEx to depreciation ratio was just above 1, so 1.1. I would expect it to be in the 1.1 to 1.2 range as a ratio going forwards. And again, I do see all sorts of numbers published. Again, people need to be very clear when looking at those ratios that they're looking at what we're spending on gross CapEx, taking account of operating leases, taking account of special projects. It is, I know, quite a tricky subject, but overall, on our bus fleets, those are the numbers that I've just guided to. We will continue to invest at a good rate in this business. In terms of bus, what we've said is because that was particularly underinvested for a period, that as we go through the disposal program, our intention is to maintain the CapEx at roughly the same levels at the moment, but clearly on a smaller business, and that will lead to reinvestment within the business. So I'm hoping I've covered all angles on that answer.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, sir. Our next question comes from Gerald Koo. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much. A couple of questions. Starting with student, what's your return on capital there? What's your capital employed, one or the other? And is growth the right answer with margins where they are? I'd rather take the view that even an underlying margin of 8% is probably not quite considerably covering the cost of capital. And also on the issue of cash neutrality, can you just clarify? I think in the past that's been phrased in a way that it's contingent upon completing £100 million of UK bus disposals. Is that still the case?
Yes. Is the answer to that one?
Yeah, okay, thanks.
It's a clear answer to that one. In terms of student, again, it's a million-dollar question. What's in your capital base? What's not in your capital base? The way I look at this, Gerald, is to say, and this is how we run the business, is I look to the divisional management and I say, what assets do you have at your disposal? And then what's the operating profit or cash return that you're trying to achieve? And that is what we should be improving over time. As a group, clearly we have to be held accountable for things like goodwill and so on. But in terms of the business, so how I look at ROCE is on the former basis. And in student at the moment, they are at slightly above our cost of capital. So they're around 8% at the moment. And I would see that increasing into double-digit numbers over the medium term. So that's how I look at ROCE. In terms of margin, I would fully accept at the moment our margin at 8%. We're only just, as I've just said, covering our cost of capital. What we have said is that with the changes that we have made in the business, that the margin will increase to double digits over time. And that those two effectively fit together in my mind.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks, Gerald.
Thank you. Final reminder to participants that star followed by one to register a question and the hash or pound key to cancel. Our next question comes from Joe Spooner. Please go ahead.
Morning. Just with reference to the dividend, you say in the statement that you'll consider that in May, by which time you expect to have better visibility on the rail side. I mean, when it comes to dividends, the kind of visibility you want is to understand what the profits of that is from that division over the medium term, and the only real way you can get that is to win a new rail franchise. So I'm just wondering what kind of visibility you're expecting to see on rail by May to help you set that dividend.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Dividend policy is based upon our long-term view of the business. Clearly, on the non-rail businesses, more time will have passed, and we can make sure that we're continuing on the track of the various transitions. On rails, several things will have happened. First of all, we will know what's happening on the paused contract, so it goes back to the discussion on what's happening on the shorter-term cash flow. But we will also have a clearer view on the structure of the franchising process. I fully accept that it's unlikely that there will have been a franchise process other than on those paused ones, and there will be a secure outcome, but at least we will understand the structure of that going forwards. And then as a board, we will sit down, because dividend, as you know, is just a part of the whole equation of what we do with our funds, and we will sit down at that stage and say, well, this is the outlook going forwards, and make that decision at the time. Now, it's not that different to what we normally do. Because we normally sit down and we decide on dividends in May. We don't normally decide on dividends partway through a period. So we shouldn't read too much into it other than we know that the world's going to change or could change with rail franchising. We will go through our normal process of considering it at that time. The difference was in the interim dividend, where we made that decision just because it was a sensible decision to make, that based upon the increased uncertainty, we wanted to reflect that we were fully aware of that and would take it into account.
And in the context of the paused contract, is one of the potential outcomes that actually is that the government actually says, do you know what, the process that we started, we actually want to change those contracts, and we'll take those processes back to the starting point as well as West Coast.
Clearly, I can't speak for the DFT, but that's certainly a possibility. Yes.
Yeah. And just finally on the West Coast, have you has all of the compensation, etc., around the bidding costs, has that all been cleaned up, and you know where you stand there, or is that still an issue outstanding?
It's still an ongoing issue. We are in discussions with the government over recompense, as I'm sure our competitors are as well. And so we're in discussions, so I don't particularly want to say anything further at this stage.
No problem. Cheers.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Eleanor Price. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Just a quick question to follow up on your what you said about your commitment to keeping your investment grade rating. Given the uncertainty on the dividend, are you willing to commit to doing whatever it takes to retain that investment grade rating, even if it would require perhaps some modification to your dividend payout?
The simple answer is yes, we're committed to it, and we will take the necessary action in order to maintain it. Clearly, at the end of the day, it's not our decision as to whether it's maintained or not. That's down to the rating agencies. But we will be doing and taking whatever action we believe is necessary to maintain that.
And do you think it's necessary in order to procure long-term franchises, or is it more just a case of being able to obtain longer-term funding? It's easier when you've got an investment-grade rating.
Technically, I'm not sure it's necessary to me for the longer-term franchises, but it's certainly helpful in that process. But it also goes to the cost of financing, the availability of financing. The investment-grade funding market is an important market for us. And as we previously said, like most companies, we are moving more into bonds because the banking sector is making it more difficult to obtain long-term banking funds, so over time we are changing that process and we want to maintain that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, sir. We appear to have no further questions at this time, and I'll hand back to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Enjoyed the discussion. Thank you all for your questions, and I'm sure we'll talk in due course.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's conference. You may now all disconnect your lines, and once again, thank you.